Our study continues in 2 Samuel chapter 14, and we're now ready to begin at the 16th verse. The setting for this passage is that David's son, Absalom, is banished over in the country of Geshur because he's killed his brother Amnon. He's been over there for some 3 years. And Joab wants to bring about a reconciliation between David and his son Absalom. And so he devises a plan to bring this about. He has a woman from Tekoa, a wise woman, to come up and approach the king with a hypothetical case. Although David doesn't know that this is a hypothetical case. The woman says that she had two sons. They strove together and one killed the other. And then this one who survived had to flee because there are those who want to take vengeance on him. There are those who want to kill him. And she appeals to David that this is her only son. She's a poor widow. He's the only surviving heir of her husband's estate. He is her sustenance, her security. And she'd like for David then to pronounce a judgment whereby nobody could take vengeance on her son and kill him. And she pleads with David along this line, and she gets David to agree that nobody's going to hurt a hair of his head. And he does this by taking an oath as he makes this pronouncement that the son will not be hurt. Then the woman lets David know that he is in the same position. He too has a son that's been banished. And she asks, why do you do wrong against the people by not allowing your banished to return? And so David's beginning to see that she's really talking about him being in the same position as this hypothetical case of hers, and it makes him see then that he has not maybe done the best thing by forcing his son Absalom to stay in a banished state indefinitely. And he's been over there for some 3 years now. And so after David makes this judgment, the woman is speaking some further words to him. She says in verse 15, "Now therefore that I am come to speak of this thing unto my lord the king, it is because the people have made me afraid, that is, my neighbors have warned me that my son is in grave danger. The people have made me afraid. And thy handmaid said, I will now speak unto the king. It may be that the king will perform the request of his handmaid." Now in verse 16, "For the king will hear to deliver his handmaid out of the hand of the man that would destroy me and my son together out of the inheritance of God." So she's further telling the king that he has had an ear, and she knew before she came that he would hear, that he would be merciful, that he would perform a judgment that would deliver his handmaid, that is herself, out of the hand of the man that would destroy me and my son together out of the inheritance of God. My son is not only removed from me, he no longer can enjoy the inheritance of God. He has to be out of the country. He's in a far place. And so it could let David further see the condition that Absalom was in. He was in a foreign country. He was at his grandfather's place over in an area near Bashan, across the Jordan River. He was no longer afforded the protection of the nation of Israel. He no longer could worship God as he should. He could no longer have the protection and the pleasure of the inheritance of God. "Then thine handmaid said, the word of my lord the king shall now be comfortable." That is, she said, "I predicted that the king's going to give me a good judgment. His word's going to be comfortable." And you know, when we have words that we like to hear, they are comfortable. They are easy to wear. They are things that make us feel good. And she further says, "For as an angel of God, so is my Lord the King to discern good and bad. Therefore, the Lord thy God will be with thee." So she says, just as an angel of God, you are able to see good and bad. You could tell what's right. You could give the right kind of a judgment, and you could allow my son then to be able to be reconciled to me. And then the woman suddenly turns from her situation back to the true live situation of David and his son. She says, "Therefore the Lord thy God will be with thee. Just as you've been with me, just as you've given a good judgment to discern between good and bad, you should have the faith and the courage to take your case to God. The Lord thy God will be with thee." And so David is now very aware of the fact that the woman has come to present the case so that he would see the true situation between himself and Absalom. And so he asked her in verse 18, "The king answered and said unto the woman, Hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask thee." I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to tell me the truth. Don't hide from me. And the woman said, "Let my lord the king now speak." And the king said, "Is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this?" David strongly suspected Joab. He's the one who was behind this maneuver to get him back to Absalom. And so he asked the woman, "Is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this?" He knew Joab well. And Joab certainly meant good here by this. He was a good friend of Absalom. He could see that it wasn't a good thing for David, nor was it good for Absalom, nor was it good for the kingdom, for this situation in which the father was so estranged with his son. The king was so at outs with the oldest son who was next in line to be heir to the throne. And so David could perceive this. And the woman answered and said, "As my soul liveth, my lord the king, none can turn to the right hand or to the left from aught that my lord the king has spoken. For thy servant Joab, he bade me, and he put all these words in the mouth of thine handmaid." So the woman told him the truth. "Yes, it was Joab. He had me do all this. And you're so wise that you can determine what's happening. You saw right through this thing. None can turn to the right hand or the left from aught that my lord the king has spoken." So she told the truth about Joab putting her up to this. And of course we know that the truth is always the thing that should reign supreme. There's no reason not to tell the truth. There's no reason ever to have an advantage by concealing the truth. So he's putting me all these words in the mouth of thine handmaid. "To fetch about this form of speech hath thy servant Joab done this thing." So Joab had a purpose, and he accomplished the purpose. To fetch about this form of speech. He's trying to bring David to the decision that he should become reconciled with Absalom. "And my Lord is wise, according to the wisdom of an angel of God, to know all the things that are in the earth." You're wise to know this thing, David. You're wise to be able to make the right kind of a decision. You're wise to be able to look and ponder and think about the situation between you and Absalom. So we see then that Joab certainly accomplished his purpose. The woman did a very good job of doing what Joab wanted. She was a wise woman. She was able to deal with David and to perceive his reaction and to take advantage of it, and she accomplished her goal. And so now David is in the position of actively pursuing a means to bring Absalom back. And so verse 21 says, "And the king said unto Joab, Behold now, I have done this thing. Go therefore, bring the young man Absalom again." So apparently Joab was very near while this meeting with the wise woman was taking place. And so the king spoke to Joab very soon after it happened. Said, "I've done this thing." That is, I have been guilty of exiling Absalom. I've been really inconsistent with my own judgment. That may be what he means here. So now go and bring the young man Absalom again. And Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. So we see that Joab was very muchly wanting this to happen. He desired it very strongly, and he had worked wisely and diligently to bring it about. He had to use a lot of wisdom and tact in order to get King David to see his point, but he now has made his point. David has agreed that the son, the man, Absalom, should be allowed to come back, and so he bows himself and thanks the king. And Joab said, "Today thy servant knoweth that I have found grace in thy sight, O Lord, O King, in that the king hath fulfilled the request of his servant." So it seemed that Joab wanted it so badly that when David agreed to do it, that now he goes all out in thanking the king and showing, letting the king know that I have truly found grace in thy sight and that you fulfill the request of his servant. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. Joab didn't waste any time, apparently. He went right on over to the land of Geshur and brought Absalom back to Jerusalem. So now we see Absalom, a man who is actually a murderer. He's actually condemned under the law, but he's allowed to come back to the city of Jerusalem after an exile of 3 years. We're going to learn that he doesn't have any repentance in his heart. He's not wanting to make any kind of restitution or any kind of humble apology, but it comes back as though he really had done no wrong, and David had made all the concessions in changing his position and letting him come back to Jerusalem instead of keeping him in exile. And of course it all happened because Joab was so persistent in wanting to have David to change his mind in the matter. And we're going to see that Absalom, due to this obstinate and impenitent heart of his, is going to cause David lots of trouble after this. And the king said, "Let him turn to his own house, and let him not see my face." So we see that here Absalom in the beginning is banished from the court. He can't really come into the palace and see the king. He can't act like a true prince. He can't be truly regarded as one who's in line to take over the throne next, but he's more or less confined to the area of his own house. So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. But in all Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. Now here's one of the reasons that Absalom seems to have had so much power and influence with the people, why he was able to gain a following, why he was able to challenge and be a true threat to David, not because of his goodness, not because of the fact that he truly was a righteous person and one that was what was best for the nation, but because of his beauty. He was a very handsome person. There was none so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. So he was a perfect specimen of humanity. And persons of this nature are the ones who are most likely to be able to be the leaders. They're the ones that other people like to follow. They're the ones that other people like to have to influence them. They like to be in their company. They like to be surrounded by persons who are of a beautiful stature. And although they may be the most rotten at heart, they may be the very worst so far as their character and their personality go, they love to be around them for their beauty. So this was the case with Absalom. There was no blemish in him. There was none to be so much praised as he was for his beauty. So we see then here is his great forte. This is the thing that gives him the inside advantage when he comes to oppose his father and to try to usurp the reign over the kingdom. Now in verse 26 we have some interesting teaching given about Absalom's hair. And when he polled his head, for it was at every year's end that he polled it, because the hair was heavy upon him, therefore he polled it, he weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels after the king's weight. Now this seems to be very heavy for hair. This 200 shekels is approximately 3 pounds and 2 ounces in our weight. But, as some have observed, if Absalom used oils and the powders on it that was common in that day, it would not be in use at all for it to weigh that much, especially if it used the powdered gold dust, as was a common practice. So, we see that he had a large head of hair. Now, another thing I'd like to note here is that Absalom was described as a person who had no blemish from his head to the sole of his foot, that he was praised for his beauty. There was none in the land that was as beautiful as Absalom was. And yet we notice that in the matter of the hair, that he cut his hair at least once a year. And we're taught in the New Testament that it's a shame for a man to have long hair. The Apostle Paul teaches this in the 11th chapter of 1 Corinthians. And so that a man's hair is not to be the same as a woman's hair. A woman's hair is to be long. Her hair is to be uncut. But the man is not to have long hair. And so if any should ask where a Bible example is of how often a man should cut his hair, this is a good example to go to. Here's a man that's described by the Bible as being beautiful, no blemish in him, and yet once a year he cut his hair. So if every man would cut his hair at least once every year, then this would give him a hair length that would certainly be different from that of a woman. We'd also like to note that this fine head of hair, which Absalom had, and evidently was very proud of, proved to be his undoing, for in 2 Samuel 18 verse 9, we see that he was accidentally hung by this head of hair. Then in verse 27, we have an account given of Absalom's family. And unto Absalom there were born 3 sons and 1 daughter, whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of fair countenance. So we see that he did have 4 children, and evidently he named his daughter after his sister, the sister that had been so humiliated and shamed. And it was over this shameful thing that happened to his sister that caused him to become a murderer, in which he killed his own brother. But he had a high enough regard for this sister that he named his daughter after her. And the manuscript of the 70 adds, "And she became the wife of Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, and bare to him Abia." And Josephus also says the same thing. But in Matthew 1 and 7, the genealogy there does include the name of Abia as being the offspring of Rehoboam. Verse 28, "So Absalom dwelt 2 full years at Jerusalem, and saw not the king's face." It seemed that he was in a kind of a seclusion or a semi-house arrest. He wasn't allowed to go into the court of the king. He didn't see the king's face. He didn't get to enjoy the full benefits of being a prince, of being the next in line to the throne. And this no doubt bothered Absalom quite a bit. So we see that he sets about on a plan now to get this changed. Verse 29, "Therefore Absalom sent for Joab to have sent him to the king, but he would not come to him." So he uses his friend Joab, the man who had been instrumental in getting him freed from his exile and allowed to come back into the country. But he's about the only one that it seems that Absalom can really depend upon to do this, the only one to have the power to go to the king in his stead. So he sent for Joab, but Joab wouldn't come to him. Joab felt like that maybe it just wasn't necessary for him to get involved in this thing anymore, and so he wouldn't come to him. And when he sent again, the second time, he would not come. "Therefore he said unto his servants, See, Joab's field is near mine, and hath barley there. Go and set it on fire. And Absalom's servants set the field on fire." So because Joab wouldn't come to him, in order to get Joab's attention, then Absalom has his field set on fire. This is a terrible thing to do. It is also a further reflection of the defective character that Absalom has. It shows that he really is not truly at heart a person who is repentant and sorry of his sin. But he is going to get the attention of Joab one way or another, even if he has to destroy Joab's property to do it. And that's what he does. "Then Joab arose and came to Absalom unto his house and said, Wherefore have thy servants set my field on fire? And Absalom answered Joab, Behold, I sent unto thee, saying, Come hither, that I may send thee to the king." So Absalom just explains to him, "I want you to come so I can send you to the king and do a little job for me." And there doesn't seem to be any more explanation needed than that. Now we must remember that Absalom is the one who is evidently next in line for the throne. Joab realized that his political future, his career, is in this man's hand should this man become king. So Joab has to take this abuse. He has to take the fact that his field was burned just so that Absalom could get his attention and cause him to come. So Absalom further tells him what he wants him to do when he sends him to the king. "Go say, Wherefore am I come from Geshur? It had been good for me to have been there still. Now therefore let me see the king's face. If there be any iniquity in me, let him kill me." So he says, go tell the king. It had been good if I just stayed in Geshur. Why did I come home anyway? Why did you have me come back? Let me see the king's face. Let me come back into the court. Like, give me back some of my privileges as the prince. And if there's anything wrong with me, go ahead and kill me. He just tells the message to David. He tells David, just go ahead and put me to death if I'm not worthy to see your face. If I'm not worthy to come back into the court, put me to death. And this, no doubt, is a bluff. He really wouldn't mean this, but he is preying upon the tender feeling that David has for him as a father to a son. And so he is using whatever means that he can to get David to let him come back and not have to undergo the chastisement of being banned from the court. So Joab came to the king and told him. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. So we see here a reconciliation now of sorts between David and his son, between the king and Absalom. To a large extent here, David is to be commended for having become reconciled to his son. However, on the other hand, there is a flaw here. David lets a sin go by unpunished. Absalom is still a murderer. He has not repented of the deed. He has not really changed his character or the type of behavior that he exhibited before. And so when David lets this go by, then we're going to see this going to come back to haunt David, because Absalom is now going to become a tremendous challenge to David, and he's going to be one of the greatest problems that he has in his whole life. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying goodbye, friends.